Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur on this Wednesday morning in the Duck South Studios. Joining me on the other end of the line, William Tootsie the Fourth. You know, when you're on here, Bill, and I have to tag you in that post, now, every time I type Bill and it never finds the right Bill.
I'm sorry about that. Funny story, Rocky, I actually, when I started on Facebook, it was years ago. Facebook was relatively new. My wife had an account. And she said, this is really cool. We can share photos and you know, only become friends with your close friends, family, whoever you want to. And it'll be a good way to exchange stuff. And I thought, okay, that's cool. But I didn't want it to become my page to be like a public thing. I thought at the time it'll be fun to have a little bitty thing with maybe 20 people. And so William Lee Cooksey IV, my full name on my birth certificate, I figured that would cut out a lot of people, you know, just clicking friend. Of course, I didn't understand Facebook at the time or what it would become. And once Avery started a Facebook page years ago, being under the radar was over. But by then, it's, you know, why change it? It's too late, and my page was too far along.
Facebook, and I was talking to Spence about this last night. We recorded his episode early because he is headed off to NWTF, but I was telling him last night, I think Facebook's days are numbered.
Really?
I think from a group standpoint, it's a great way to get people together in the group form, but from a personal and business standpoint, man, the young crowd's been gone for a few years, and now you see people our age mainly moving over to Instagram. Something is coming. Something is the next hot thing, and it's real close. I'll tell you an interesting fact. This is what's really, really interesting about this. Spence was, I hope you didn't get mad at me telling this, but I see it from my standpoint. So I'll talk about it from that standpoint. But they really reeled you in and make you spend money from a business page standpoint. You know, they let you go wide open for a little while, and then they start reeling you back when they see how popular you are to make you spend money. To get consumers or followers to be able to see your content. Well, I'll give you a cool, this is a pretty cool statistic. A video. Let's just take a video, for instance. And if you were to go start a page, you started putting out videos, man, they were really popular. On average, you're going to get about 200 views per share. Well, once you kind of gain popularity in Steam, they reel you back in, and this is how tight it is. You usually don't get, by the time they reel you in, about 60 views per share after they kind of turn that faucet down just a little bit.
Yeah.
That's unreal. Listen, if I choose to follow Bill Cooksey or whatever it may be, Avery, I don't care what it is. Let the people see they chose to follow it.
Well, they're making so many changes, and a lot of it brought on by the elections. We in the NGO community are really feeling it because so much of what we do at least talks about politics. You know, about the public lands bill, about the Clean Water Act, and because they're political in nature, it changes the parameters and how you have to register, the hoops you have to jump through. Fortunately, I'm not the one that has to do that. We have some great folks inside with social media who are trying to jump through those hoops so we can continue on. But if you're if you notice a lot of NGOs aren't quite as wide open as they were, that's the reason for it. A lot of the conservation organizations, and also they're changing, as I understand it, the algorithms. Where about the only time our stuff really gets seen very well is when an individual shares it. And that's always been a help, obviously, but now just because you have 10,000 people following your page doesn't mean anyone's going to see what you post anymore.
Yeah, maybe 10. You know, your first post, they kind of grade you out on it. You may get 30% from it is kind of where it stands right now. And if you don't get their certain amount of interactions that they feel is, they'll knock you down a little bit more to make mm-hmm. you want to sponsor that post. That's the two things yeah. that irks me. You take Vanishing Paradise. It's not like you guys are reeling in tons of money.
No.
You know, it's a little time.
We're never even asking for money.
You take an organization like that. If I decide to follow you, see, to me, I should see every post you make.
Mm-hmm.
That was my choice. It's not like you're out here trying to sell Vanishing Paradise hoodies.
Yeah.
You're not. It's an important organization. And if I chose to follow you, that means I want to see what you have to say.
Sure. I agree. And hopefully some of this will shake out. I mean, like anything, when you go in trying to make sweeping changes, and we all knew some of that was coming. Obviously, things go overboard in some directions most of the time, whether college football or politics or setting duck seasons or making changes to the parameters of seasons and limits, people take it too far. And hopefully at some point you rein it back in. And I think that's what we'll probably see with Facebook, but you know, the whole deal with people going to different platforms, there's no doubt younger people with, you know, Snap and Instagram and you know, all this other stuff. And I'm sure there are some I'm not even aware of that are gaining fast. I still love Facebook because my favorite interaction online is still message boards because of the way you can communicate with people and stay on topic or go off topic, yet still maintain that the cohesive nature of the thread. Facebook is next. Because it's the most like that. And once you go to Instagram and Snapchat, it's a picture and a bunch of likes to me, yet other people love it. So that's fine. We all have different, some folks like shooting divers, some like shooting mallards in the trees.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Josh Raggio about this. Josh is a huge Instagram guy, and we were visiting about it yesterday, and he's like, Rocky, why aren't you all over Instagram? I'm like, there's no social interaction there.
Yeah.
He said, oh, yes, it is, man. This is, and he sees it from a different perspective than I do. And I'm not faulting him with that. For his business, it is awesome. It is
sure.
Really, really awesome. But when you're depending on people to communicate with one another, so, you know, with Duck South, maybe not so much. I can't for the life of me see maybe posting up podcast episodes, maybe with a link in them. That would be great. But as far as people getting together and talking to one another, I don't see it there.
And even videos, their limits on size are so.
That's right.
The constraints are so high. I mean, we've made a whole set of videos 1 minute long just because of the Instagram parameters, and that can be tough. So I'm with you. I mean, my friends like Bert Nangel and Bill Buckley and those guys who are all into photography and make a lot of them make a good chunk of their living for photography. Well, Instagram's great for them. And those are my friends. When I look on Instagram, have 897 likes for a picture of a dog with a mallard or a dog with a mallard in his mouth. You know, whereas I could post about anything on Instagram, and if I get 15, I've had a good day.
Right. All right. So I sent you an email the other day.
You did.
Let's talk about this first before we jump into our little game that we're going to play. I sent you an email from I don't know if he wants me to say his name because it's something that he wanted me to look into, and I have not had time to look into it. I've been crazy. So I sent it over to you.
We probably shouldn't say his name yet. We'll let him.
Yeah, I don't want to put that out there. But anyway, he sent me this study from NOAA. And according to this, and I'll let you go into a little bit more detail about it, but according to this study that's been going on, it looks like the magnetic North Pole, has been moving north-northwest about 30 to 35 miles a year the past 9 years. Is that right?
That's what he says. That's what he says.
And that's from NOAA.
Correct. And it's one of those things, because I sometimes deal with the folks at NOAA, so I have sent this to some friends who deal with NOAA all the time to say, hey, any information you can turn out on this, I'd appreciate it. But those folks, it's not part of their actual world as far as the ones I sent it to, so it's probably on their back burner. And, man, it was hard to turn much up online, or at least for me, in the time I spent looking. But I had seen some things about it, and I did substantiate it appears to be happening. It's just, what does it mean? What does it really mean to duck on it?
Well, as a, we as people that understand me a lot less than you, but we understand that birds migrate with an internal GPS that works off of the Earth's magnetic pull, right?
Only partially. There are a lot of things that go into to migration and how they get where they're going. Frank Melrose was able to stick a light on a duck's tail and release it in the dark, and the duck basically flew in circles on a night when there were no stars, no light from the heavens. So he was able to substantiate to some extent. Some ducks use celestial navigation. Ducks use landscape and features on the land for parts of navigation. And then I found a Forbes article which really went deep, and I mean deep in the weeds, on ducks seeing the Earth's magnetic field. They can actually see it, and they've isolated the proteins that allow them to do it. And some birds, that protein increases right before and during migration. So there's a whole lot that goes into how ducks find where they're going, and that's why I don't know if this really is a big deal or is something that is having an impact on migration.
All right, well, let's investigate. Let's be a detective for a second. Let's take this past year totally out of the equation, okay? 100%. Mm-hmm. Because if you can say that anything else happened besides weather this year, you're a nut.
Yes.
You know, I keep coming back to the point that the Patton said they lost one day to ice, and that was in November. That's not good.
Right. As I've said, if I don't bust ice at least three times in the first 20 days of December, the season's going to suck, especially for people south of me. And people have to remember, weather is a lot of different things. First, get over when your granddaddy killed ducks. I've killed ducks when it's 80 degrees in shirt sleeves, too. I did it 5 years ago on closing day of duck season when it was zero the week before. And I have pictures. We're in a blind where we had ice eaters running a week before. Now we're in T-shirts with mosquito dope. And it was hot. So where you are, weather only matters as far as how your local ducks, how it impacts them and their behavior. But weather to your north and water, both to the north where you are and to the south. And here's where I kind of don't know how that magnetic thing really affects where ducks end up in the migration. And that's where we all get a little sidetracked, I think. Some people want to talk about the photo period controls migration. No, that controls when they will start, not where they go or how quickly they get there. So we know that if ducks get to Northwest Tennessee and Northeastern Arkansas in good numbers, but they aren't in Northwest Mississippi. If suddenly the water situations change and Northwest Mississippi habitat just explodes, you know, y'all get a freak storm that comes up from the southwest and misses Arkansas and Tennessee, but it gets y'all's little rivers out, gives you sheet water everywhere and all, you're going to have an influx of ducks from those that are 150 miles north of you, because they know when that water changes in a place.
All right, well, let me play black helicopter for just a second. Mm-hmm. All right, so awesome. If it has been moving 30 miles to the north-northwest for the past, let's use minimal numbers, because I'm saying 30, let's just say 5 years. That's 150 miles.
Yeah.
All right. Even though it does have a minimal effect on ducks, have we not seen the migration kind of move 150 to 200 miles to the northwest of where it normally has been?
Have we? And when we have, can we pin the reason? And are we seeing that same shift in the Atlantic, the Mississippi, the Central, and the Pacific flyways? Because you're getting a whole different angle on where that sucker is shifting when you go across the country.
Because you traveled a ton. This is a great question. In 1998, let's just say 2000, what you went to work for Avery what year?
2000.
Let's say 2001. 2000, that was some great years right there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember duck hunting in Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado, Nebraska, being as good back then? I'm talking killer as it is now. Kind of when you were setting up these rider hunts.
Yeah, it wasn't
for ducks, not geese. Take geese out of it.
What's that?
Take geese out of it. Let's speak on ducks.
Right, and I still don't think of Colorado as a big duck place. I mean, it's still more of a goose thing for most of Colorado, in my opinion. Nebraska, Oklahoma, yeah, I did. But I was dealing with those pro staffers And they were sending me pictures of their hunts every day and what they'd been doing for years. It was just never promoted.
Internet was not present, you know, for pictures and videos to go wild to say, hey, man, we're wearing them out here.
Right. Right. And when people did see it, it looked weird. I mean, when you saw pictures of a guy hunting ducks on a river, to us, that looks odd. I'm talking their style of river and hunting, their topography. It looks weird. But I saw the pile pictures, and they were real photos the guys were sending me. So I knew it was happening. I don't know. You start looking at bird counts. Has there been a little bit of a shift? I don't know if there's been a shift so much as possibly they've had, you know, some better breeding seasons. They've had, you know, who knows?
I don't think they can count those ducks in Central Flyway. When you're talking millions of acres of corn, and you can have 1,000
right.
sitting here and 1,000 sitting 100 miles over that away, you can't mm-hmm. count that. It's impossible.
Right. I don't know. There may have been a shift, and it's worthy of talk, but I want to hear it from science, not from us, as far as before I buy in to it. I'm not poo-pooing it or magnetic north shifting as being reasons we feel our seasons haven't been as good a lot of years lately, although for me last year was, not this past year, but the year before was pretty friggin' phenomenal. December was meh, okay. January, You give me more of that. I'd only hunt January if you gave me a January like last year every year.
So they've always been killing ducks. They've always been killing ducks. They probably just didn't talk about it because they don't care about ducks. I will say that about the Goose Hoodie Patrol of the Midwest.
Yeah.
They don't care about ducks. They think we're ignorant because we want to chase ducks. We think they're ignorant because they want to chase geese.
Right.
It's an ongoing battle.
And big game overshadows all. You know, that's all their, historically, that's what their game and fish agencies promoted and talked about. That's what they pushed out through the media. That's, you know, that's what people went west for. It's amazing to me, anyone talks about, you know, Colorado, Montana, and those states as waterfowl places, just because historically all anyone wanted to talk about was elk and, you know, mule deer and whitetails and antelope and, you know, and the same as you get into different parts of Oklahoma, Nebraska, and those states, although they've always been big bird hunting areas, too. It just no one ever really promoted them as waterfowl destinations. I'm sure it's changed because their agriculture's changed, whether they're pulling birds from the Mississippi Flyway or it just so happens they just have a healthier source on the breeding grounds that tends to go to the Central Flyway. I don't know. So for those people who think I'm a know-it-all, I'm not.
I'm cranking up the black helicopter. Here we go. All right, so mid-2000s, that mallard line used to be around Catahoula Lake, Alexandria, Louisiana. And it seems that line, that migration line, is now kind of going across northeast Arkansas, north of Stuttgart. Let's just say that. Across into Oklahoma. You look at these bird concentration maps. I think a lot of these ducks, the way it looks on most concentration maps each year, they look like they come down to Oklahoma and then head east.
Well,
the way it looks.
There have always been, one of the reasons Stuttgart has been like the mallard capital of the world,
followed the Arkansas
obviously
River.
You have the Mississippi Flyway funneling ducks in. But then you also have a pretty good-sized river that drains out of the Central Flyway right down into Central Arkansas, right at about Stuttgart. And mallards come down the Central Flyway, take a left, and head to Arkansas. So at that point, you're really starting to combine two flyways as far as mallards go.
Yeah.
And now, frankly, I would say the mallard line historically you could go a little farther south and you could get down around Maurepaugh where the original Duck Commander was filmed out of Warren Coco's camp. That was as good a mallard shooting as you could find back in the day. And it didn't die because of weather or anything else. It died because of that giant Salvinia overwhelming the place. There's nowhere for a duck to land or eat there anymore. And now most of the trees are dead, or the trees are dying in a hurry. That's one of our priority projects for Vanishing Paradise. But then you'd go over to southwest Louisiana around Sweet Lake and Lake Arthur and those areas, and those are historically big mallard areas. Now, Venice, you get down around the Bird's Foot, they killed mallards, but that was always a pintail, teal, widgeon, gadwall. But then let's talk about Mississippi. I mean, Beaver Dam Lake, you look at Nash Buckingham photos, and gadwalls were always, you know, at least one of the predominant ducks. Yet, over the last several years, Mike Boyd's blinds have been killing most years more mallards than gadwall, even though 20 years ago that was unheard of. So I don't, you know, it's hard to put a finger on, and it's so weather related. Once they get down here, that
I'm hitting throttle right now on the black helicopter. Here we go. I'm gonna throw it at you. All right. So if that be the case, Magnetic North has shifted 30 miles a year to the northwest. Let's just say northwest for the past 5 to 10 years, somewhere in there. All right, we know that minimal effect on birds. It has some, but we'll just say that it's minimal right now. Now, but one thing that moving the Magnetic North really does have an effect on is weather.
Right.
I mean, you're talking, it could, if this is the case, this is just something that's being discussed. Like I said, there's no firm evidence, you know, beside this communication with the PhD from Mississippi State that sent this to me. This could have a huge effect on weather. And you take the anomaly out. Last year, we had three pretty warm winters, warm and wet.
Mm-hmm.
17, 18 was kind of an anomaly. And this, then you got this year. 18, 19 kind of resembled those other two.
Yeah.
Is that what we might be seeing in the future? Not asking you to predict it, but could this affect us where see winters like this all the time?
We've obviously seen a change in weather and temperatures. I mean, I've had someone on Duck's House say, you know, when you look at the averages, it's only, you know, down to like a degree of change, a degree and a half. Man, that's huge when you're talking about, you know, forget averages, but what comes together to form that average is when you don't have the cold fronts. Yeah, we always had 70 degree days in the wintertime. But then we also, in the same week, probably had some, in my part of the country, 15-degree days. You know, that's why our snowstorms are the best ever, because we get the sled, build a snowman, and 3 days later, you don't need a jacket. But now we don't get the snow anymore. I mean, we didn't have any all year this year, other than a few times we saw it coming down, just never cold enough to stick. We're seeing warmer weather, whatever the cause is. Is it Magnetic North shifting? And that's something I hadn't even considered, to be honest with you. So I need
it drives
to,
weather. The magnetic field of the Earth drives weather. Here's the other thing that you and I have talked about a lot, off the air and on the air.
Mm-hmm.
The position of where cold fronts come through Canada and the United States now.
Sure.
Compared to when they were called Alberta Clippers for a reason.
Right.
I can remember the days of, you saw the cold fronts on the old weather maps when they actually used to have artwork on the old weather map. It would show a cold front coming down through Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means that
the Dakotas, even.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the jet stream was dipping down. was coming out of there and going, dipping down and coming across the southern United States and going back up. Now, it's most of the, where you see the jet stream coming out, it's central Dakotas. So you've seen a shift in the majority of where the jet stream's coming down. What is that? That's probably a couple hundred miles, right?
But you know, look at that January of 18, we had traditional clippers coming down. Then this year, that jet stream barely dipped in, and we were getting stable fronts from the west.
That's right. And we're seeing a ton of weather come out of the west now compared to, man, when I used to get up for school every morning, that was our tradition at my house. I had to sit there with my dad from 6 to 6:30 and watch Weather Channel. So I remember those days. The weather used to come from the north, not so much the west.
Yeah. You know, and I don't, obviously neither one of us are weathermen or climatologists. And
right. Not, and
my
not
memory
to...
may be anecdotal because I was searching for those cold fronts when I watched the Weather Channel, or before the Weather Channel, when you watch the local weatherman, and he actually had like a cartoon of a cloud blowing, you know, like for snow, they'd have snow sprinkles. You know, I don't know if anybody remembers those old cartoonish things weathermen would put on their maps, but you'd sit there just waiting for that cold front. When's it going to happen? And boom, here comes an Alberta clipper. It just seems we don't get any of them anymore. Last year we did. This year we never did. So it's definitely changed. And if it's magnetic north doing it, if it's greenhouse gases, if it's, you know, whatever, if it's changes in the ocean, or if it's a combination of myriad factors, and that would probably be my best guess. But that also means any change to any of those factors could influence it to shift in a more positive direction for we duck hunters.
So I almost hate discussing stuff like this on the podcast because some people won't understand that there's a level of what if in what we're discussing.
Sure.
And some people will take it up. And Ben Rock said that magnetic field of the earth shifting to the northwest, screwing duck season up. That's the definite. We may have a magnetic field federation pop up, the MFF now.
Get Ducks Unlimited to install some big magnets in the right place. I don't know. How do we fix that? But I pulled up when you brought up weather. I pulled up on Google, and the first thing that popped, the Earth's magnetic field impacts climate. Danish study. So when we get off, first thing I'm going to do is start reading some of this. That its effect on weather actually has me more interested than its direct effect on ducks.
Yeah, it has a huge play in weather. All right, now I got a little game I want to play with you. It's called After the Duck Season. After Duck Season, why not? Okay.
Gotcha.
So let's start with this one, Bill. It's your favorite question because I know I've seen you answer it 73 times. I've counted them. 73 times you've answered the number one question of after duck season, why not? Bill, and I know I'm going to play the part, okay? I'm going to play the part of the person asking why not. Or why?
Mm-hmm.
First question. Bill, why can't our season go into February? I mean, that's when the ducks show up. Don't answer the second part of the question. Just the first part.
The why can't we?
Yeah.
Number one, it would violate international treaty. Even for what we do with snow geese, we have to have special clearance and work with Canada and Mexico to be allowed to have that conservation order. We don't shoot ducks that late, and frankly, we're already shooting them too late. I don't remember the date it was before we all, and I was one of them, a narrow-minded person or short-sighted who potentially clipped Trent Lott to give us that this later January closing like we've had now for the entire time of our liberal season. January is when ducks truly begin pair bonding on a large scale. And they're preparing to head north and hit the breeding grounds. The earlier they get a mate and the more stable that pair is, when they get to the breeding grounds, the better their odds of being productive at nesting, at breeding and nesting. And obviously, we want ducks to make more ducks. So when you kill a pair that has made it up and ready to go, you've just put an additional stress in her trying to, if you kill the drake, now she has to find another mate. And in the process of finding that mate, she's going to expend a lot of energy. And hopefully, she doesn't end up finding a bunch of mates at the same time who could kill her. It happens all the time with waterfowl, and most of us have seen it. A bunch of drake mallards can be pretty brutal to a hen. So the earlier we stop shooting them, and obviously you have to pick a time, but the earlier we stop, the better odds of ducks having good production on the breeding grounds that spring.
So once and for all, we will never see duck season like 99.99999% fall into February. Is that what you're saying?
I would be shocked. I mean, I think the odds are better of me walking into FedEx Forum in Memphis and making the Grizzlies.
I don't see that.
I don't either.
All right. Second question of your favorite duck hunter, why not? Bill, why do the ducks always show up on my place in February?
But that's probably when you put out the most corn. But seriously, y'all, obviously weather can be a part of that. But what's happening for the most part, in most areas, and I'll tell a story or a couple to illustrate it. As soon as duck season closes, what are the best days typically to hunt? The days when ducks, the first day after ducks have had a long break. All of a sudden, you know, your spot that hadn't been all that good, you have some ducks using it, they're not so stale, you have a good day, then by the next day they're gone and you can't kill them anymore. And I'm talking about stale ducks like we often have at the end of the season. What happens, we close duck season, a lot of people drain their fields. You know, if you don't have a youth hunt coming up or you don't have an agreement with that land, the farmer or whoever to leave water on it for the northern migration, I mean, a farmer's going to get that water off as soon as possible. So we all know, you know, I've had farmers over the years at times come in pulling the boards as we are picking up decoys on closing day to drain rice fields. So you have a lot less habitat most years because people are draining fields. You have a long break of no hunting. What happens? Ducks start using areas they haven't been using over the last few months. They come off the reserves. They come out of the refuges. They come off of white oak duck woods and hit other places in that area. Sometimes it's strictly a matter of what your field's good for. I know fields in several parts of the country that never hold ducks till February, but they evidently are great as far as invertebrates at that point in the season when ducks are really seeking them. Fields that you couldn't kill 50 ducks in a season, suddenly they're loaded. So it's not ducks getting here. It's a change in everything. It's a change in the ducks' needs at the time, but more than that, it's a change in available water and food. And even more so, a change in pressure.
Change in pressure.
I'll never forget 1987. I lived in Southern California, and some guys from a Ducks Unlimited committee I was on invited me to come to their club the weekend after the season to help pick up decoys, check out the place. And I was young enough then, picking up decoys with a bunch of guys was fun. See the place and see if I want to join the next year. Oh my God, Ducks everywhere. It was incredible. And at that point, I think their season closed like January 15th. It was not a 110-day or whatever season on the Pacific Flyway back in the 80s, but it was much longer than ours, and it was loaded with birds. I was a member of that place for 3 years after that, and I never saw birds like that, except every year, the third week in January, when we went over and picked up decoys. I never really noticed that in Tennessee as a kid because we weren't there once duck season closed on the good duck clubs. I mean, you picked up the last day and everybody's out of there. So I didn't know that, but it kind of taught me to at least think about it. And then all through the late 80s and most of the 90s until we changed the season, it was the end of January. I mean, I can remember in the 90s going snow goose hunting at a club I had in Arkansas that was really pretty poor duck hunting, but we killed a lot of geese after duck season closed. I remember being over there Super Bowl weekend goose hunting with duck season closed, and there would always be more ducks a week to 2 weeks after duck season closed. It was insane. Those ducks had been there all year. They're the ducks we said the biologists were lying about. You know, they've been on the refuges. They've been in places you couldn't get to them, and you just believe there weren't any ducks. Take the pressure off. Things change. Here they come. That's what people are seeing most of the time. And it's always been that way. You put the season to February 15th, February 22nd, you're going to have more ducks all of a sudden.
Well, we're going to have to continue this game, but I got one more. Third one, we'll go into next week with the why or why not duck hunter, after season duck hunter questions. Neil, my grandpappy used to go hunt parts of Texas, and they used to see tens of thousands of snow geese in parts of the,
Eagle Lake in Katy Perry? Eagle,
yeah.
That's where Pappy went?
Yeah, that's where Grandpappy went. He used to kill geese all the time out there. Now, they don't hardly see any geese, snow geese.
Right.
What happened, and do you think the corn held them up north, further north, short-stopping them?
Well, the answer to the last part, somewhat, as far as corn held them up north. Number one thing that happened, If Grandpappy's still down there, tell him to go out and take pictures of those rice fields he used to shoot geese in, and most of them are breeding tract homes in that area because it's the fastest growing place in the country. They don't have rice production like they had. You know, historically, when God ran the flyway, and one of the reasons snow geese were never overpopulated is they nested in the Arctic. And they did make a migration, for the most part, to the Gulf Coast. Texas, Louisiana, Gulf Coast. They went to the marsh, and that's where they stayed for the season. Agriculture changed them. Suddenly, they found their needs being met farther and farther inland, to the point now their needs are met in Arkansas, Missouri. You know, I've seen them in Missouri in, you know, December and January. And obviously, as we know, Arkansas and even Tennessee, as a kid, I remember when a friend of mine shot a snow goose in West Tennessee, and we're like, wow, I'd never seen one before. Fly over. Same with speckled bellies, to an extent. Agriculture met the goose needs. Now, at first, they came inland to Katy Prairie in that area, and a lot of them still go down there. There are more of them there than people realize. They just don't have many places left to hunt. A friend of mine manages almost 200,000 acres down there. They have a lot of snow geese. but it's managed, it's owned by one man. It's his private hunting preserve. So yes, agriculture inland changed the snow geese, but the biggest problem down there has been the urban sprawl.
I want to ask you this, and I'm not getting into an explanation right now. I want to see if you've heard of this. Do you heard anything about this new hybrid rice that farmers are planting? Maybe it's something we both investigate before next week. This is serious, that it's tougher for waterfowl to, the husk on it is tough. And I've heard this from Jeffrey Estes was one of the ones talking about it, and I've heard a couple other people talking about this new hybrid rice that's out there. You heard anything about that?
No.
It's harder for waterfowl to utilize it as a food source.
Interesting. Why would anyone care about that? Or is that not the goal? Is that just a side effect?
I mean, just being able to eat it. It's tough to get to the rice because of the husk that's on it. Just so tough to get to.
But what's the advantage of it to the farmer or
sure
whoever would
more bushels
to grow that rice? Why would he want to do it?
I'm sure it produces more bushels to the acre.
Okay.
Stronger stalk.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
I don't know that.
I was going to say, ducks eating rice is just not a big issue for farmers anymore, so I didn't.
I
assume
didn't
that was
know
just
if
a side
you
effect
had,
of it.
Had heard anything about that.
I have not. But I will definitely try
to dig
into it. I will
tell you
this,
though, Bill. Yeah, I mean, both of us read up on that. I will tell you this. There are some people in South Louisiana that's got a little bit of sense. I don't know how a post popped up
absolutely
on my timeline this morning, but it was some Louisiana guys fighting back all the nonsense coming out of South Louisiana, you know, mm-hmm. about the loss of the wetlands in South Louisiana. On top of that, adding all the crawfish ponds that's went in, all the sugar cane that's replaced the rice down mm-hmm. there. And these are South Louisiana guys fighting back against all this nonsense of short-stopping ducks. It was kind of refreshing to see a few of those guys doing that, you know.
The people who scream first and loudest are the ones who are upset, who are mad. And if they can find someone to follow, that's what they do. And we saw some of that happening. And now more and more we see the normal Louisiana duck hunter. Yeah, he's not happy with where his duck season has been for the last several years, for the most part. But he's a rational thinking person who has studied this stuff. He doesn't only think about ducks when the season opens. You know, he's studying them other times and trying to learn more about them. He's interested and he wants to do good things for the resource. And yeah, we all want to shoot more ducks. So they're just like the rest of us. And they want answers, but they're not immediately going to the conspiracy black helicopter stuff. We see it all the time at Vanishing Paradise, even without when you get away from ducks. I mean, we just posted a blog a guy wrote wherein he says, and this guy's a fishing guide, in I believe it was 2012 or 13, he wrote a blog condemning freshwater diversions, or actually sediment diversions is what they really are, is more accurate, and was just about dredge spoil being used to rebuild the marsh. Now, he has come full circle to the point he still wants some dredge spoil, and we do too. I mean, it, for certain projects, it's the way to go. But now he realizes the best thing in the world is diverting that Mississippi River out into those marshes and creating more marsh and bringing in places a lot more fresh water in, and it changes things. But he sees a healthier marsh in the places where it's happened already. So, you know, attitudes do change, and eventually people see through most of those conspiracy theorists it's fun for a little while, then you realize this guy's an idiot. And he's leading us down a wormhole.
Waterfowling is cyclical. It will come back sometime.
Yes. We thought in the early 2000s, we all thought it was over in Arkansas. 2000, 2001 was great, but boy, after that, it started dropping off in a hurry. We thought it was over, and then boom, it came back. And whether it was as good as it ever was, I don't know. Who can tell you that? You look at numbers, you listen to people, but I thought it was as good as it ever was in most of the 2000s. But those early years, we thought it was over. I thought they were following the Canada geese. They were never coming back. Here they are.
We'll jump back into why or why not after season duck hunter questions next week, Bill. I'll have you a list.
Let's do it.
I love playing black helicopter conspiracy theorist.
Absolutely.
Bill, thank you again. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.